Thank you for tuning into the Healthy Minds podcast, where we host conversations with people who are really good listeners, and we ask them to share with us. I'm Lucy Caldwell, and I work for the Fairfax County Public Schools. April is Child Abuse Awareness Month. Child abuse cuts across all boundaries of race, education levels, income brackets, and there are more than 20,000 reports of child abuse each year in Northern Virginia alone, and 3.5 million across the United States. With the trauma of the pandemic that so many of us have experienced, Healthy Minds Podcast, that's us, is dedicated to bringing important issues to light. So there is a new Speak Up, Be Safe curriculum. That's an important program. And since it's Child Abuse Awareness Month, we want to talk about that today. And we are trying to make sure that parents and educators and any of our listeners know, you know, sort of pick around under the hood with SCPS, know what we're talking about, what's important to us, and what we value. So I'm very happy today to welcome our guests, Francesca Watson, Fairfax County's Body Safety Program Coordinator under the Department of Family Services. Francesca joined DFS after 10 years of experience in the private sector. She's an enthusiastic humanist with a passion for promoting the welfare of others and empowering children. I'm glad you're here, Francesca.
Thank you for having me.
Sure.
Excited to be here.
And we're also excited to welcome Lori Harkin Hughes. Am I saying that right, Hughes?
Yes.
Okay, great.
H-U-S-E.
Great. She's a licensed social worker who works full-time at London Town Elementary in Centerville. She's been with Fairfax County Public Schools for 6 years, and she formerly worked in the Child Abuse and Neglect Prevention Program at DFS. Her specialty is dedicating her work towards supporting those on their journey of healing from trauma. So I want to welcome you too, Lori, and I'm so glad you're here. And this is the first time I've had two guests at one time, so this is going to be a lot of great conversation. And please feel free, just bounce off each other. Don't wait for me to ask a question, because this is a topic that you all have been working on, and it's a difficult topic, very tough field. So I want to first find out how both of you came to your interest in working in this field. Francesca.
Oh, okay. Well, I originally started my work in the private sector in business, and I realized over a long period of time after supervising a lot of different talent, a lot of different people, working with people, just how much I really wanted to help others and do more, have more fulfilling work in my life. And at a later age, finally discovered really what my passion was and switched my field, was really daring and so happy that I did that because I truly, truly love what I do today. I wake up every day just so grateful that I enjoy my job, passionate about what I do and the children I work with and also the people that I work with.
Were there experiences that you had in the private sector that opened your eyes to child abuse?
Certainly, I worked with a lot of different staff, so very diverse individuals, came from all walks of life and had different experiences in their life. And it just really drew me to that field over time and just hearing more, learning more about it, and some experience myself personally. So brought me to the field.
Awesome. What about you, Lori?
So, yeah, so I feel like with social work, it's been in my blood. It's been just all this time, you know, since I was young. I grew up at Fairfax County, so went to Fairfax County Public Schools, had wonderful experiences. And then I went to college and pursued a degree in human services and then just really enjoyed helping people, speaking to people, talking about their past, their goals, what they want to do in their life, just overall wellness. And then pursued social work in my master's program in graduate school. And then worked for Department of Family Services with Fairfax County for 15 years. Started out doing foster care and adoption and then CPS ongoing type work and then eventually child abuse and prevention. And then had three kids of my own along the way and decided that I wanted to work with Fairfax County Public Schools. So I was really blessed that I was able to transition to FCPS and then to London Town and in Centerville full time. So for me, it's always just, I've always liked the helping aspect of social work and talking to people and just really helping them to recognize their strengths and what they want to do in their life.
Right.
And being able to support them.
Right. A lot of people probably don't realize that it really is the goal of social work and social workers, and it's what they do.
Yeah.
So the pandemic. I tell you. I'm curious to know from both of you, have you seen trends that concern you or worry you during the pandemic? You know, let's kind of shine some light on some of this.
Yes, well, absolutely. I mean, there's been an increase in mental health concerns for our students, for our family members, extended family members, a rise in addiction issues. The isolation of the pandemic has really been difficult on staff as well as students and the families. Mm-hmm. So definitely those trends. In regards to child abuse and neglect, all of that is sort of interwoven.
Yeah.
You know, when you have increased mental health concerns, increased addiction, people out of jobs, work hours being cut, not having that structure of the day and the consistency of their day, that has led to rises in child abuse and neglect as well. So I would say social, emotionally, there's lots of concerns for students and family members, extended family members. And of course, the trauma of the pandemic, grief and loss issues, health issues. So many students have been impacted by COVID itself. You know, family members have been sick. Family members have passed away. I've had several students that I've worked closely with that are dealing with that grief and that loss of family members who've passed away. And then family members who've gotten sick and then been hospitalized. And thankfully, some have gotten better, but some also have some lasting effects of COVID-19. So all of that has impacted the mental health of our students, of our families, and then impacted their ability to be able to focus in school and be able to attend school and all of that.
Yeah. Definitely.
What about you, Francesca?
For us, I think mostly what we've seen is just a lot of lack of that connection to resources. Mm-hmm. So there's families that need food a lot more, mm-hmm. families that don't have the connection to the schools, mm-hmm. or anyone that they can that can help them get the things that they need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just this last year, 1 in 7 children have experienced abuse and neglect. So obviously there's the abuse there, and we're not necessarily hearing about it either. The mm-hmm. children are not around their mandated reporters or those safe adults in their lives that they can talk to. They may be more isolated with their potential abuser. So there's a lot of risk and mm-hmm. Definitely a huge concern.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we think about that, and we know that it's there, how does someone, and as we start to come back together, we're in, you know, roughly 4 days a week now, many, many students, not all, but many are, they're back together 4 days a week, and in the fall, they'll be back together 5 days a week. But how does one know the signs of trouble? The kids are coming back together, the teachers are there, maybe kids are resuming play dates and things like that. How does somebody recognize a sign of child abuse or neglect in another, like they're a friend or a yeah. child that you know?
Well, our teachers are at the forefront of all of this. I mean, when I think about everything the teachers and the school staff have gone through with this pandemic, I just get emotional thinking about it because they have yeah. been working so hard and they are the ones that recognize, I mean, they're right there with the students. They recognize behavior changes. They recognize, I mean, if it's an injury, they call me in right away. The other thing too is while we were distance learning, the teachers would call me and text me. They would, you know, bring up concerns about things they saw in the background mm-hmm. of the homes,
wow.
or maybe even the students' demeanor that changed that day.
Right.
So as social workers, we were constantly busy. And I think it's just really important to recognize just how much our teachers and our school staff recognize those early signs and how they reach out to staff to make us aware, and then we reach out to the families and we reach out to our partners with DFS and with Fairfax mm-hmm. County to get those services and those resources in place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And especially with, you know, in particular, the body safety classes, now that they're virtual and not in the schools at the moment, you know, we look for those signs. We make sure that we're talking to the children, their individual classes, so we're able to have more of a conversation around delivering the curriculum. And we're looking for those signs. And also, thankfully, to all the teachers mm-hmm. and social workers, school social workers in the schools in general, to reach out to DFS to mm-hmm. let us know. Because, again, we don't have eyes on these children. Mm-hmm. So that those are our only eyes and community members. And that's why right. we really rely on the community now for that responsibility that they have as well, to let us know if they see anything concerning, or if they hear anything concerning of any children sharing any information, to mm-hmm. definitely ask more and let someone know if mm-hmm. they do.
Well, mm-hmm. tell me about this. You mentioned the class, and I want to hear more about that. You remind us all what the name is and what the goal of the class is and how people can take the class. Is it for all of us?
Sure, sure. So the Body Safety Program uses the Child Help Speak Up, Be Safe curriculum. We have been running for about 14 years. We've always used Child Help's curriculum, but have switched from Good Touch to Good Touch, Bad Touch to Speak Up, Be Safe. And traditionally, we were in the schools. We would be hosted by London Town and other wonderful elementary schools. Mm-hmm. And we teach children pre-K through sixth grade mm-hmm. five key safety rules.
Really, what are they?
I have to tell you.
You have to tell me.
So the first rule, and there's demonstrations for the rules too. So
yes,
it's
of
really
course.
Interactive, helps them remember the information. The first safety rule is it's my body. Helps them understand that it's their body, belongs to them. They have boundaries. They set those boundaries, and to definitely tell someone and speak up if someone does cross their boundaries. The second safety rule helps them identify who their safe adults are. And we make sure, even in the classrooms, individually with all the students, help them identify at least two safe adults. So they know it's not just teachers. Who is it? Is it Mrs. Miller? You know, is it your uncle? We want to make sure they know exactly who their safe adults are and who they can go to.
I think that's a really good idea for parents and other caring adults to talk to their children about.
This Absolutely.
Is really, really important, because it, you know, we're all so busy. Maybe parents aren't always thinking of that, you
right.
know, and nobody wants to think about these difficult, difficult topics.
And they're hard to talk about.
They are.
They're hard
they
to
are.
Talk about. I think that's the biggest challenge for some parents, is that one, they may think that they're talking about it in schools, which they are, mm-hmm. But also that they can talk about it at home.
Right.
Yeah.
Identify those safe adults.
Yes.
I like that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What's the third one?
Third safety rule is I have choices. Helping them know that they have choices and what they can do in unsafe situations when there is no safe adult around. And the fourth safety rule, of course, is to tell someone. And that would be any one of their safe adults. And to keep on telling until someone does something about it. Because like you said, Lucy, children may be saying something to us.
Mm-hmm.
We may be distracted. You know, we've mm-hmm. got a lot of stuff going on, all of us,
mm-hmm.
As parents, as professionals, and we may not hear it. So it's good for them to keep on telling.
And maybe tell that safe person that
yes.
they've identified. So it's good to remind them, you know,
right.
of how all these lessons are connected to each other.
Definitely.
And all these messages.
Definitely.
Okay, and what's the next one?
The fifth safety rule is, I think, one of the most important, is that it's never their fault.
Yeah.
So we teach them the four different types of abuse, and really using the curriculum's language makes it so easy. It's a language that they can relate to, that our volunteer facilitators and myself, we can, you know, explain and use with our students. And also the parents, that they can continue to use, and the teachers and the
mm-hmm.
schools. And it makes it easy to talk about child abuse, because, you know, like we said, it's a hard topic.
Absolutely. And a lot of people have had experiences in their own personal lives with
yes.
it. And so that may cause them to think a certain way about this topic.
Yes.
Doesn't it?
Yes.
So what do you see with parents and other people? How do they learn about how to talk with their own children, or people, grandchildren or nieces and nephews, neighbors? How do you learn to talk about this?
Well, I think it's important, too, to note that parenting doesn't come with a manual. Right. You know?
I wish it did.
So right. I really wish it did, being a mother of three kids and, you know, changing needs. And every day is a different day, right? And I think it's important to also note that parents are, for the majority of parents, are well-intentioned, you know. And
right. Absolutely.
They don't want to hurt their children. And that's right. important to note here. And that's part of the child abuse prevention piece. I think yes. that's really important. When there's so many different environmental things going on, internal things with parents, and also all the pandemic, I mean, those increase in stress levels and management of big feelings too. I mean, I think there's just a lot of all of those teachings that we can do as professionals to mm-hmm. help parents manage those big feelings, model for their children how to manage those big feelings, because like I said, I really truly believe that parents love their children and want what's best for them, want to support them in their education, but don't have those tools a lot of times, mm-hmm. you
right.
know? And so learning from each other, we do parenting support groups. We partner with, you know, DFS with Francesca and my other former colleagues there at DFS with many prevention programs. Mm-hmm. So there's parenting classes yep. that parents can take. You learn from each other. You learn as a parent. And then that partnering piece is really important. And then the other, we have parent coffees too, that we coordinate with the school social workers, coordinate with our parent liaisons. And also with the school staff and our school counselors, where our mental health teams are very strong at Fairfax County Public Schools in each school. And we know each other's strengths. We know the challenges that we all face, and we really support each other so that we can support the students. I know at London Town, we also provide CPS refresher trainings for staff each year so that they know what to look for and they know what they need to do when they need to make that report, mm-hmm. because we all are mandated reporters, mm-hmm. and it's hard to make that call.
Yeah. It is hard to.
Hotline. It's very hard to make that call. So having the support of your colleagues to do that, I think, is really important as well.
Definitely.
But yeah, to answer your question, I think the role modeling piece for staff, you know, it's that kind of, it takes a village, that mm-hmm. trickle down effect of what mm-hmm. we're doing and supporting each other. Then trickles down to the families we work with, which then trickles down to the children and the students that we work with. So
I remember I had a teacher friend, and she would call me, and this was before I came to FCPS, and tell me, you know, different things about her students and different challenges they were going through. And I was in the mental health field just for 3.5 years in communications, so not as a clinician, but I was around them. So you know, you absorb some of the lessons and some of the information. And she kept telling me about a situation with a student. And so every time I would talk to her, I'd say, have you followed up? Mm-hmm. And so it was, there are even issues with reporting. Mm-hmm. You know, teachers or others might be afraid to report. Mm-hmm. Or they're worried about, they might know something about the family and they're worried for the child. If that gets reported, does the child get taken away right. or, you know, what happens? And so there's a lot. It's heavy on teachers. Mm-hmm. What can you all talk about that issue, about reporting and the importance of, especially when you see a trend, you know, because you're afraid sometimes, I think, as a mandatory reporter to say something if you think, oh, this could cause such a big problem for this child. Mm-hmm. What can you say about that to help listeners understand the importance?
Yeah. So when a teacher comes to me and they're hesitant, or any school staff actually, when they're hesitant about making a report, I walk them through the steps, because I think, you know, knowledge is power, right? So if we, it's not just the phone number that we're giving them, we're walking them through like what they're going to ask, the specifics about calling the CPS hotline. And then also reframing it for the teacher or the school staff that it's really about accessing help and accessing resources for the
yes,
family
well
and putting them on our radar and being able to support them. You know, we get a friendly person on the other end of the CPS hotline call or answering. And then we walk through the situation with the CPS hotline worker, and we walk through the specifics to see if it meets the criteria for child abuse and neglect. But we're also talking about the strengths of the family, what they bring to the table, things that they can, that will help them to overcome their challenges that they're facing. So it's really about reframing it as you're not calling to get someone in trouble, but you're calling to, well, first, we're mandated reporters, so we do need to call, but we're also calling to be able to access resources for the family. One of the programs that we work with at London Town is called the Neighborhood Networks Program. So it's a child abuse prevention program.
Yes, it is, Lori.
Yeah, so it, when you're calling, when we're calling the CPS hotline, we're not immediately getting CPS coming to the house. In fact, I've had very few instances where I actually, since I've been at FCPS, can't think of a situation where the CPS hotline has been called and then CPS has removed the child in that exact moment. I mean, there's so many prevention efforts that are going on within the county, and one of those is the Neighborhood Networks program. So we have families.
That sounds like another podcast they need to do. Yeah. Neighborhood Networks.
Yes, it is.
Yes, yeah. They are definitely a wonderful program. And so they provide intensive case management. They support our families. There are specific schools within FCPS that are part of the Neighborhood Networks program.
It's good to know.
And it's a voluntary program with DFS, and the families that I have in the program love it, love having the home, the social worker coming out to their home. Now they've been doing virtual visits because of the pandemic, but services have not stopped. They're still going strong, and they're still connecting the families to resources. And so it's been, it's just been instrumental and just so wonderful for that collaboration piece, especially during the pandemic.
One of the things you talked about was managing those big feelings. And I can imagine during the pandemic that students, first of all, they're around their parents and other adults a lot more. And they're seeing them, and they're seeing them maybe in a different light, you know, maybe with their own frustrations, and maybe with expressing themselves just sort of fluidly, you know, rather than maybe thinking a little bit harder about what you're saying around a child. Do you have experiences on that or anything you'd like to share about that?
Well, I think a challenge that I have seen come up is that with parents home more and children home more, they think their parents are accessible to them all the time. And so parents are trying to do their manage their own work if they're working from home. And then
they're in meetings
and the children are trying to access them because they have a question about something and the parent can't get to them right away. So that's created, you know, stress for both because the parents want to be there, but they also have to manage their workload as well. And so, you know, for parents being able to say, you know, mommy or daddy's in a meeting right now, let's save that for a little bit later. I can come to you and talk to you about your schoolwork or, you know, whatever's going on later. But right now, mommy or daddy are in a meeting and we have to get this done, you know. So being as verbal as we can with our children, explaining what's going on, I think that helps children to know what's happening with their parents' inner world, you know. And because there it is, it's with children and parents home more, there is a lot more of that interaction, and there's a lot more of the stress. I mean, the different jobs and tasks haven't decreased, they've increased. So trying to manage all of that is difficult, but it can be manageable, I think, if people talk more and parents and children talk more about what they're feeling or what's going on in their head. I think that's really important.
Does this class you're talking about, does it talk about feelings and expressing feelings and things, Francesca?
You know, we don't get in too much detail about expressing feelings, but certainly encouraging them to communicate in general if they're feeling any way. As they get older, we highlight the importance of balance and, you know, mentally, emotionally, physically, all of those different things. And in that sense, we do and talk about making sure that they express their feelings. If there's any negativity or they're confused about something, even for our younger ones. So it really helps them not only identify, you know, who to talk to, but what makes that person important to talk to, or why are they a safe adult? Because they trust them. They're able to listen to them. They can talk to them about maybe embarrassing things or confusing things. So we do encourage them to communicate and certainly talk about, you know, if they're not feeling well about anything. And I think also just to kind of bounce off what Lori was saying, I've seen also a lot of pressure, which I'm sure you have too, with the older siblings because maybe their parents aren't as accessible,
right.
You know, and just to throw it in there too, because we were talking about it, the parenting education program, although as parents, we don't have a manual, but they do offer a handbook. So with their classes, that could be another podcast.
I love it. Let's do it.
Yes. And you know, it is important to know that our services, like the parenting education program, body safety, whether it's in school or virtual, they're all free. They're free for any families in Fairfax County. So anyone who thinks that, especially the body safety program, their child could benefit. And it doesn't have to be anyone, you know, that is concerned about their children. It's just an educational
general
class.
Information.
I don't think that could ever hurt any child from knowing.
When did that curriculum start?
So we have been running for 14 years. Especially compared to Lori, I'm a newbie to the county. I'm not sure about Child Helps, but we did use, like I said, Good Touch, Bad Touch before for quite some time. So as I came into this position, we started using Speak Up, Be Safe. So we've been using it for about 4 years.
How does this get into the schools? Do schools have to request it or do PTAs request it? How does that happen?
So it's kind of a mutual effort, actually.
Okay.
So I reach out to schools, and it's funny that you mention it, because, Lori, we got to get London Town on the schedule.
I know, for next year, exactly.
It's
next
our schedule.
Year.
Yeah, our schedule.
I was thinking PTAs, too.
Yes, we have presented at PTA meetings. And we have schools that, you know, always are excited about us to come. So there are those that just reach out to us every year. We have a number of them on the calendar for next year, which is great, next school year. And others that I reach out to and I talk to them about it. And I think it's really important because, again, it's not about, you know, whether there's a large concern of exposure to trauma or anything for any students in their schools, but just educational, preventive.
Absolutely.
You know? That's the idea. You know?
Absolutely.
You don't want to wait until the end where you're, you know, with the hospital analogy, right?
You
waited so long that now you have to go to the emergency room, you know. Definitely do it ahead of time, even when you just feel a little bit of something.
Right.
And then that way, you know, the goal being of the program is to prevent abuse from happening.
Absolutely.
Or interrupt it. You know, maybe it does trigger a conversation, which we have had. You know, there are disclosures that come up from this class when we go to schools, as you can imagine.
I can.
It triggers that. But that's the good thing, because then we're addressing it. We're handling it, and we're, you know, at the end of the day, focusing on the safety and well-being of that child.
When we talk about being a mandatory reporter, I can imagine that I really like what you said, Lori, about what to expect when somebody calls to report something that they've seen or they have concerns about, that it's not an automatic police trigger.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So I think people might think that it is. And so that's where that fear of calling comes in, isn't it?
Exactly. Exactly. And then there's a lot of support that the school social workers help school staff with, you know, the aftermath. If the call is accepted, you know, how to support the student, how to support the family. So there's a lot of problem solving around that. The other thing I did want to mention is that the Virginia Department of Social Services has a portal now, an online portal. So you're able to report through the website. I have not done that because I like to call and actually talk to a live person, all of that. But there is that ability because there was a long wait time.
Where does that go when somebody goes online?
So it goes to the state.
Okay.
And then the state, my understanding is the state reviews the information and then filters the criteria to see if it meets the child abuse and neglect criteria and then sends it to the appropriate jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so that's helpful too because, you know, child abuse and neglect doesn't occur from 8 to 5 every day, you know, there's the after hours component. There's calls that come in the middle of the night. There are students that reach out to their teachers in the middle of the night.
Right.
You know, send them messages.
With social media, probably.
Yes, social media. I can imagine. You know, there's that 24-hour ability to call. And then also we are mandated to call within 24 hours as well, too, to make that report. The other thing that I did want to mention is I am part of, I'm an ACE trainer. Mm-hmm. So that is the Adverse Childhood Experiences Interface Trainer. And that is a countywide collaboration. There's state funding that Fairfax County received. We partner with George Mason University staff, and then we have DFS involved. We also have the court system. We have CSB. We have all of our community partners within Fairfax County that piloted this. I was part of the pilot program, so it's 2 or 3 years ago when I initially was trained. And that is another prevention program that we are offering within FCPS and with Fairfax County as a whole. But essentially what we do is, as an ACE interface trainer, we provide training to basically anybody, any community groups, pediatricians, school staff. I've done presentations for the PTAs. We've also worked with our school board members on coordinating presentations. But what it basically does is we talk about the ACEs and your ACEs score and how trauma impacts you as a parent and as a child. And it gets us to shift our thinking from not what's wrong with you, but what happened to you.
Right.
So that is so important for our school staff, for our community members, for our parents to understand. It builds empathy. It builds that kindness,
right,
the compassion, what we were talking about earlier, you know, being kinder to one another. Instead of stigmatizing and pointing the finger at people and saying what's wrong with them, let's look at it like, what happened to them? Mm-hmm. And how can I support them? How can I be a mitigating factor for those ACEs score and bringing that down? So that's been important work that I am so grateful that I've been able to be a part of. I'm also, you know, bilingual Spanish and English, so I've been able to provide that program in Spanish to some of our Spanish-speaking family and community members, which has also been instrumental, I think, in being that part of that prevention piece.
Mm-hmm. Both of these courses sound amazing. How can people request them?
So we have a parent support line in DFS that they can call, and they could put in a referral for the parenting education program. They could do it for body safety. We have some other programs that actually the body safety program is a part of, volunteer and partner services. And we connect with the community to really utilize the resources we have here in our community. So all of a large majority of our programs are supported by volunteers. So they help us facilitate those programs. But we also have our donors and partners that we connect to. So you can call the parent support line and ask in any way to help and contribute. And also, if you need any resources as a parent, if you have any questions about anything, we can connect you to even self-sufficiency. Maybe if you have questions and need support with employment, financial needs, medical needs, we have that too available. And our body safety program is also, we now are facilitating the virtual classes in Spanish. So we have that available too. And we have parent cafes. And that's just something that we do virtually, that the parents can come together and join virtually on Zoom and kind of talk through any challenges they're having.
Yeah, it's hard to talk to your friends sometimes or your mom and dad, even as an adult, about what you're going through with, you know, without feeling judged.
Right.
Sometimes
it's the biggest piece.
Easier sometimes to talk to a stranger or come together as a group
and feel that part, that sense of community. You know, I think that makes a huge difference for them.
Absolutely.
You're not alone in this at all. You know,
have you seen an impact with the pandemic? Have you had an uptick in people participating?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
In our parent education class, we've been, you know, it's virtual. It's really successful because everyone,
they don't have to get in the car.
Yeah, there's
sort
no
of no barrier.
It's raining today or there's a storm.
Exactly.
So it's been great.
That's really good news. So people just go to the DFS website and
you can do a search
for
fairfaxcounty.gov and search for Building Stronger Families.
Okay, great
to
know.
And you can get access to our parent support line. You can call 703-324-7720. And we also have one of our prevention programs is our Healthy Families program, too. And I know in bits and pieces they work with the schools as well for any parents of newborns. But it's also another preventive program that we have that really supports parents of newborns, new moms, teen moms from maybe that were getting referrals from middle school and high school, and supports them throughout their upbringing, you know, of their new child, supports them and connects them to those resources that they may need. And, you know, there's home visiting there, too, like neighborhood networks, which makes a big deal.
That's really helpful information.
Yeah.
Very helpful. Are there any other things, before I let everybody go, are there any other things that are happening this month in April in recognition of Child Abuse Awareness Month that you know of? I did see one that I thought was interesting, and I signed up for it myself. It's on April 30th, and it's a community conversation in conjunction with SCAN of Northern Virginia. Lacey Crawford will speak about institutional response to peer sexual abuse and how to unpack strategies to make safer spaces for children. Apparently, the author, Lacey Crawford, wrote a book, her memoir. It's called Silencing. Are you familiar with that, or are you familiar with this event?
The book, but yes, that would be definitely one of the events I would suggest for this month. Absolutely.
You know, because when you get involved and you just start listening to podcasts or listening to webinars and learning more about these subjects, then you have information. So people will come to you as a resource, or if you happen to come across a friend or associate or a colleague, then you can be a resource. Again, without information and all the information you share today, how can we really help each other? And in Fairfax County, you know, we've all led such busy lives. And then with the pandemic, we all sort of went into ourselves, went into our hidey holes. And it's time to get back out. But I think there's going to be some bumps as we get back out together.
Yes.
And we start facing each other and having to have conversations again in person, you know, not having being able to turn off a screen when you don't feel good that day. You know, you've got to be brave. You've got to be bold. You got to get back out there. But I really think both of you are coming. Do either of you have any sort of parting words or anything else you wanted to add about Child Abuse Awareness Month or any of resources or programs that we didn't touch on yet? I want to make sure you have the last word.
I know. Well, I also wanted to piggyback off what you were saying about the generating that conversation piece and how important that is to reduce the isolation, to feel the connection. And one thing that the Child Abuse Prevention Program has done in the past is the Pinwheel Project. In April. And so you see the blue pinwheels all over, agencies and in front of people's houses. And that in of itself generates that conversation between folks and then gives us the opportunity to educate the community and our neighbors and say, you know, just be aware that there are children in this neighborhood and in this school that may be, you know, having some concerns in their house that need some support and need that prevention. So I think that generating that conversation, like you said, is really important. And the other thing that I did want to just mention too, I know I mentioned a lot of the county agency providers and partners, but our spiritual community, our church partners in Fairfax County have just been wonderful throughout this pandemic.
Yeah.
I mean, they have helped all of the schools with clothing needs, with food assistance, financial assistance for, you know, rent that is due or utilities that are going to be cut off. So our church, our spiritual partners have just been amazing. And, you know, it's all of us working together to get through this and, you know, and also supporting each other. And I think like what you said, we're going to get through it and it's going to be hard. It's going to be bumpy. But as long as we rely on each other, I think we will get through it.
And I think some of those resources that both of you have shared today really will be helpful. And hopefully, you know, we've opened a couple of eyes today about some really neat free, quote unquote, because we're all paying for them together. I think these resources are really important. And we're all, you know, maybe this pandemic has caused many of us to take a look at our own lives and what can we do to help each other and to be of value to each other as a community. And maybe we've had a little bit of time to think some and look inside and look inward about our own lives. But I really want to thank both of you, Francesca Watson from Fairfax County's Body Safety Program from DFS, and Lori Harkin-Hughes, licensed social worker here at London Town Elementary School. Both of you so much for being here and joining me on the Healthy Minds podcast. And our listeners, if you have an idea or a suggestion for a program, just send me an email at healthymindspodcast@fcps.edu. Thank you again.
Thank you so much for having us.